Blog Talk Radio.
Your host and cruise director, that is Madam Perry, and here with me is my faithful, trusty, always a heck of a good time gal, Becky Kyle. Becky, say hello to the people.
Hello, people. Happy New Year early.
Isn't she great? Becky, I'm so glad to have you here. I'm broadcasting from Mars Hill, North Carolina, and where are you from? In your Knoxville or?
Mm-hmm. Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah, okay. And so we are going to do a show tonight. We've got an interesting fellow calling in later with some, if you're into high-tech stuff and the very latest in uber-cool high-tech, you're going to want to stick around for when this guy gets in. He's been working with some engineers in the UK that have been flying over here to a small town in Georgia just to work with this guy, and I didn't even know about it until yesterday. So I don't mention his name yet because he's a semi-regular visitor to the show, so I'll leave you on the hook. And anybody that's listening or saw our post on Facebook, you can call in and tell us what you thought, some of your good and bad and happy and whatever moments of 2015. It's been a wacky year. 2015, of course, everybody can say that about every year, but Becky, this year's had some crazy years, crazy things going on. Politics, current events. What do you think?
I don't know. It's been like a full moon all year long. and throwing a bit of Mercury retrograde for most of it, and you kind of got it.
Well stated. That's true. So, oh my gosh, who would have ever thought that the political race would go on like it's going now with Trump? Who would have thought he would have been so popular just by being an asshole?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, he's kind of like everybody's crazy uncle, and, you know, usually most of us kind of, okay, we tell amusing stories about him, but we move away from him at the Thanksgiving table because, you know, we're kind of afraid if he cuts the turkey, he might hit us with the knife too.
Becky, that was quite an analogy. And who's writing your material now, Colin Kelly, or is that one of yours?
That's one of mine.
Wow.
they'd be better if Colin wrote them. I'm just sure of it.
I don't know. I don't think so. Colin's pretty, he's got some pretty good descriptors. He's got a pretty good command of the language, huh? So What was your favorite part of 2015? And this can be personally or just globally. What was the best thing to use? I know that recently I've read that you've been selling some stories.
Actually, my first novel was published at Halloween, it launched at Mile High Con in Denver, Colorado. So that has to be the topper of it.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
And I have 5 positive reviews on Amazon, and I'm at about a 4.9 in my rating as far as that's concerned. So go out and buy it.
I will. What's the name of this book? We've got to know what it is.
The name of this book is Fanny and Dice by Rebecca McFarland Kyle. It's the story of Persephone and Eurydice. Persephone decides that she's going to crawl up out of hell because her mother Demeter hasn't called her to bring spring to the earth for quite a number of years.
Uh-huh.
And she's crawling up out of earth, and she ends up in the weird Wild West. And we've got gunfighters and vampires and Carrie Nation tearing up the saloon where the two of them work and all kinds of crazy stuff going on.
Okay, now, you know, I have talked to you about this before, but for people that are just getting to know about you, where in the world did you get the idea to put this into the Wild West? This is, you know, this story, Into the Wild West.
You know, it was kind of an act of desperation. I had a writer's workshop scheduled with one of my favorite fantasy authors at SoonerCon, which is a science fiction and fantasy convention in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, where I kind of came up in fandom and, you know, truly found my people and got my weird on. So I had a writer's workshop scheduled with Peter S. Beagle, who, and if people don't know, he is the author of The Last Unicorn, among other amazing fantasy novels. And to be real honest with you, I paid my, you know, I put my, signed my name in blood and I put my money down and, you know, I had a panic reaction just right when my excerpt was due. You know, I had 5,000 words due. And I thought, what am I going to do? And I had a dream, and that was what I dreamed. It was very vivid, and I wrote the first chapter down. I handed it in to Mr. Beagle. He didn't return it with any kind of marks on it at all, but he said, this feels like a novel. And I was like, what? You know, I really honestly didn't know what to do with it when I turned it in. It was just like, okay, comment on my writing. You know, it either is great or it sucks or something. And he said, this feels like a novel. And I said, well, what am I going to do? And he said, well, let the characters tell their story. So that's precisely what happened.
Wow, because, yeah, because, girl, especially, that's like being anointed from on high to get that from him.
Yeah, I was shocked.
Peter S. Beagle, honey. Well,
so I told the story. I mean, literally, I thought it was Persephone's story, but it just turned into Eurydice's, and it just happened. Then I submitted it to Wolfsinger Publications, Carol Heitschu in Colorado Springs, Colorado. On the 24th of December of 2014, and I thought, okay, I'm not going to hear from her until, like, probably never, if it's like any other publisher. And she said, well, I read the first chapter, I liked it, and I will get back to you in a few weeks. And that was the 24th. I thought, okay, yeah, sure. and the next thing I know, literally, the next thing I know, December the 26th, I get a letter that says, I accepted your novel. We're publishing it next year, and it's coming out in Mile High Con. And it was the best Christmas present I think I've ever gotten, including kittens. Well, okay, excluding kittens. Kittens are the best Christmas present ever.
And I know that's pretty high praise from you, you know, comparing it to kittens, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Comparing it to kittens, I mean,
yeah.
You know, a lifelong adventure is still not as good as lifelong aggravation.
But I am just so excited for you because this is, Peter S. Beagle, the launching of the Wolfsinger Publications, launching it at Mile High Con. I mean, come on, that's a dream come true. It really is.
Right, and it's there. Most people are saying it needs to be a serial. We need to hear more about her. And the interesting thing is, I published the book, and I was visiting my favorite aunt in an assisted living center in Colorado. Unfortunately, she did not survive to read my book, which is a sad thing. But I did get to see her while I was there, and there was this amazing woman that was walking down the corridors at the senior center, and I cannot describe her anything more than just light. I mean, you know, by necessity, that corridor was bright, you know, for the seniors to traverse, bright and wide and conducive to conversation and whatever. And she walked down the corridor, and this woman just sparkled. She was in her 80s, hair white as snow. She wore snow-white clothing, silver glasses. And, you know, we started talking to her, and it turns out this woman was Greek, and she had multisyllabic first and last names, which they had reduced at immigration to two-syllable first and last mm-hmm. names because the Americans could mm-hmm. pronounce it more easily. And I mm-hmm. sat there and I thought, as I was talking to her, I thought, you know, this is the kind of thing that happens to women like Persephone and Eurydice. You know, this is mm-hmm. this is a personification of one of my characters grown old. And she was just this amazing, determined woman. She, you know, she strode those corridors like she owned the place. And she seldom was out of motion. And she talked, you know, she had memory issues, but she didn't refer to people as the staff. They were the administration. You know, she was just really probably very well educated in her youth and probably in a position of authority, and she exuded grace and personality, and I thought, you know, it's kind of a verification of what I've done.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, the whole thing. This is a great story, Becky. I'm so glad you could join us tonight and tell this. Well, you know what? We're going to take a little short break. I think that I was trying to find a song that falls in with what you're talking about, with the whole story and Fanny and Dice. And I remember when your aunt passed away, you know, early this year, and just how deeply it affected you, I know. And then this lady, so I think the song is by Hugh Cornwell. I don't know if you're familiar with him, from The Stranglers, and it's from his most recent album that came out this year. And this song is called Under Her Spell.
Excellent.
enjoy what we have when some of us are going without? Or would our blessings be more enjoyable if everyone shared them? 17 years ago, Lisa Thomas McMillan was forced to consider these questions when she witnessed. Can we really enjoy what we have when some of us are going without? Or would our blessings be more enjoyable if
All right. Well, let's see. I didn't get that whole bit in there about living fulfilled, but I certainly will tell you about it. But right now, where is my friend? Becky Kyle is here with me in Madame Perry Salon. We're talking about 2015, exciting things to happen. Becky, I might have mentioned just a teeny bit of this to you earlier, but I tried to keep a lot of suspense in there. But you know how I'm big on sci-fi and how sci-fi, the future, it's getting to be now with all the things, all the crazy gadgets and abilities to do things, right?
Right.
Well, listen, got a guy on the line here. I shouldn't say on the line. He's actually here in Madame Perry's virtual salon with us, and he's definitely a friend of Madame Perry's salon. We've had him on before, and if he's not on, we talk about him a lot in the best way. He is my friend. He's a musician, and he's a producer, and his name is Joey Stuckey. Joey, welcome to our...
I'm glad to be
hey,
with you,
Joey.
It's been too long, my friend.
It has
hey.
Been.
You're
going to have
Becky
to teach me how to drive blind, dude.
I can do it. I can. If anyone can do it, I can do it. The most important thing is not to know where you're going.
I've got that hooked.
That's my favorite. You know, honestly, when I was a little kid, my mom would take me to amusement parks, and we were too dumb to think I couldn't do stuff. So they put me in the bumper cars, and I just go crazy. And it was a blast because I mean I didn't know where I was going. Nobody else knew where I was going. But the whole point of a bumper car is to ram people. So I'm perfect for that.
You know, I think that's the thing, and I've met your, and I'm grateful that I've had the opportunity to meet your parents. And yeah, that's just the thing that just sort of turned you out. Like, okay, Joey, this is it. This is the world you got to live in. Get in it.
Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm really glad. I mean, my people forget that I can't see all the time, and while sometimes it's a little dangerous, I mean, I prefer it. So I mean, you know, even my mom and dad will forget. You know, they've been dealing with me for since I was born, obviously. And my dad, one day we were going to Georgia Public Radio to do a broadcast, and I had to perform. And we were walking down the street, and he wasn't paying attention. He was just gazing off in the distance, I guess. And I just rammed me right into a fire hydrant. So, that day I think it was fun. Yeah. But they've always made sure that I didn't take things too seriously, and I think that's a good idea. I think it's a brilliant idea.
My life motto is sooner or later you're going to look back on this and laugh. You might as well start now.
That is fantastic.
Ooh, that's good.
I'm going to adopt that.
Someday I'll explain the dream that came from.
Okay. All right. We got another show booked. Well, listen, Joey has got some really cool stuff going on, and I think when I put it out, you might have seen this on Twitter, Joey, on your Twitter. I put something about why engineers, has anyone noticed that these engineers are coming from the U.K., flying into Macon, Georgia, and back, and some kind of secret project going on, and now you're going to finally tell us.
It's all very top secret. Yeah, all right. Very top secret. I mean, you thought Philadelphia project was top secret. I mean, this is really stuff. No, you know, it was amazing. This has been sort of a wonderful landmark year in many, many ways. And one of the most important things that I value is making new friends. And when I was in the U.K. speaking at University College in London back in March and releasing my single over there, Blind Man Driving, and some stuff like that, some of the people that I met are these brilliant college professors and graduate students who – love music technology, and who actually, you know, without prompting, said, hey, how can we make life better for other people? Which I think at the heart of every engineer, that's kind of what they probably grow up thinking. Hey, how can I make a better bridge? How can I make a better house? How can I make a better car? And, you know, improve people's lives. But these guys happen to think, how can I make some music technology that improves the lives of blind musicians and blind producers and blind engineers. And there certainly is, even though being kind of a musician and being blind are kind of a, I don't know if a stereotype's the right word, but something that is commonly associated. There is a community of blind musicians and producers and engineers out there, but it's a small community. So very often, a lot of the big corporations don't feel like it's a community worth serving because there's, you know, a finite amount of resources and that kind of stuff. So it's been an uphill battle to make when everything switched from things that had dedicated buttons, like the tape machine you press record every time. You know, nowadays with a computer, the buttons are what we call soft keys. It means they can be anything. And what the button does depends on what screen you're on. Well, for a blind person, that just doesn't cut it. So nowadays with everything moving to computer, these engineers were thinking, hey, how can we make some technology that really improves people's access to music technology? And as you know, music technology has become very prevalent and very easy to access these days with a home computer and all this kind of stuff. So anyway, we got to be friends. We got to talking. We got to brainstorming. And it eventually led to me being one of the keynote beta testers in the project and actually guys from Goldsmith University flying in to Macon, installing the hardware and software into my studio here in town, and then giving me time to – they stayed for 3 or 4 days and worked with me and experimented with it and all that kind of stuff, and then, just left it with me for a while and all that kind of stuff. And I, you know, being kind of the media whore that I am, I got the local media involved and got all the TV stations in town – like showed up to cover the story. And not only did they all show up, but they all showed up at the same time. I couldn't believe it. It was amazing. And what's important about that is that they were able to take these universities, Goldsmith's is one, and St. Mary's is another. These universities were able to take that media coverage that we got here in the States and parlay that into more grant money and more development funds and to show people how important the work was, that it wasn't just some project that was kind of interesting but wasn't important. So that was really important for them to be able to have that tool. And I'm excited to say that I actually was just talking to one of the guys, Adam, who's become a good friend of mine. I was just talking to him today and via email. And he was telling me that all the sort of improvements and suggestions that I had made, they've actually gone so far as to build a new prototype or retrofit the prototype that we have to incorporate those additions. So that was really exciting. And the technology, I don't want to bore anybody, but the technology basically is twofold, and they're kind of the same idea in a sense. One is a plug-in, so it's a program that lives inside another program, and it allows you to have an audible tone when your audio threshold exceeds a user-definable preset. So if I want to – decibels are a measurement of volume. Just like we have feet, inches, and liters, we have decibels. So if the music goes past a certain point, what will happen is it will become displeasing, it will distort, it will become unclear, it will become muddy. So you want to be able to watch for that. Well, typically there are these little meters that move up and down that show you what's happening. Of course, a blind person does not have access. So this thing will make a tone when – when it hits that threshold, so that's very handy. The other thing that's
question
on
real call, quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I ask a question? What about if it's too low? What if it's? I mean, you know, I would assume that they would get sort of a clue to that. But what if it registers too low as well? Does it hit both sides?
That is, you are super smart because that is a really important. I teach music technology at Mercer University. And that's a really important concept that we study. It's called signal-to-noise ratio. And the idea is that you don't want the signal too low, you don't want the signal too loud. This meter, basically, you know, what they are assuming, and I think it's a fair assumption if you have some knowledge of music technology, what they're assuming is that you can tell if the signal's too low by how loud it is on the speakers and that you're just watching for what we call clipping. But in theory, they haven't really provided for that. But in theory, what you could do is insert two instances of the plug-in on the same channel, and then what you could do is you could say, okay, I want to know when it goes past the lowest level I want it, and then I want to know when it hits the highest level I want it. And you can actually assign, you know, different tones to that. So you could do it, although I don't think they thought about that, because I think they figured the blind people could tell just based on how noisy. I mean, basically what you the ratio I talk about, signal to noise, means anything electronic has what we call system noise in it. Hum, buzz, click, static, whatever. Hiss. And so the goal is to get the sound loud enough that it masks that system noise, which is just a byproduct of electricity flowing through it, but doesn't go so loud that it distorts the input. So I think they, and I can't speak for them really, but I think their thinking was that we could tell if it was too low, and the real trick is making sure it wasn't too loud. But that's an excellent question and a really thoughtful question, because that's honestly, I mean, it sounds very simplistic to say signal of noise, you don't want it too loud, you don't want it too low. But honestly, like, you know, 50% of the recordings I hear that are bad are because people don't understand that basic principle. So that is really insightful for you to ask. But that there is something kind of exciting in that that program was so successful that they are now working on another device that will allow you to monitor – not only volume, but frequency. So you'll be able to see. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's a great diagnostic tool. You know, it's basically, you know, a spectrum analyzer that has different tones for, you can set for different things. And so it will be, because one of the problems we have is blind people, again, when buttons are soft, in other words, when the button, you have four buttons on the screen, and they all change function depending on what screen you're on, is knowing, okay, well, am I on the EQ screen or am I on the where am I? Just having that basic roadmap of where things are. So they're really working on trying to get more and more user-definable tones to give you alerts on whatever you find most useful to have. Hopefully that answered the question. But the other device that's really exciting is something called the haptic wave. And it's a
– Yeah,
it's
that's
much
what
more
I want to know about, the haptic wave. Sorry,
yes,
I got all
the haptic
excited.
Wave. No, it's very cool. It really is extremely cool. I don't know why. I mean, honestly, I mean, I'm not like an electrical engineer or a structural engineer, but thinking back on it, like I don't know why it hadn't occurred to me to do it. But then again, I would never have had the resources to go and make these things. But what it basically is it's a wooden device. It's about the size of a standard computer keyboard. Mm-hmm. And it basically has an X and a Y axis. So it has a lever or fader that moves from left to right, and a fader that's built on top of that fader that moves up and down. So as you move from left to right, you can scrub through, or some people say scrub, shuttle, fast forward, whatever you want to use. But you can move through the audio, and the little lever on the top bounces back and forth on a scale. It has little scale markings on the side, and it will tell you what dB each little sample of the audio is. A lot of people don't realize that when you record something, there's something called a sample rate. That's how many slices or samples of a sound the recording makes per second. And it's just like when we were kids, I obviously never could enjoy these, but when I was a kid, they had these things called flip books, and they had a bunch of drawings on successive pages, and if you flip through the book really fast, it looked like it was in motion. And that's the same kind of thing with – it's the same thing with sound. So when you capture these little slices of sound, obviously the more samples per second, the more realistic and authentic and seamless the sound is. So when you're editing a sound wave, if a drummer makes a mistake or a vocalist has a note they need to pitch correct or whatever, or if you're wanting to make a sample, if you're doing electronic music and you want to take a sound and alter it or sample it, turn it into a loop, you know, you need to be able to move through what we call the waveform of the audio. So this device allows you to do that, and the little haptic part, which just is a fancy word for touch, means that I can feel tactily with my hand the same thing that you're seeing with your eyes on the computer screen. So as it bounces up and down, it tells me, okay, this is real loud, this is real soft, that kind of thing. That's real handy because a sighted person can look at a waveform. Like, for example, my wife is a midwife and has no real musical background at all, although she knows all the lyrics to every 80s song ever, the good ones and the bad ones. She knows them all. but she has no real musical background. I mean, as far as like, I mean, trained, you know, musical background. Mm-hmm. But she can actually, she actually does, you know, a lot of surgical assists and actually does some incisions and sewing, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And she can look with her eyes and see. I'll say, hey, there's a part of the song I don't like, and it happens after the space, after this next chorus. She can see that on the screen, zip over to it with the mouse, cut it out, mute it, reverse it, whatever I want done in literally seconds. Whereas if I have to, like, listen through and find it, it takes me forever with the current method. And one of the reasons she can see it is because, for example, if it's really low or really loud, she can see the waveform looks different. So it's now with the haptic wave, I can see that same information with my hand. Now, one of the things that the haptic wave didn't have when we first started was it didn't have what I call zoom control. So in other words, you couldn't tell it how far into the waveform you wanted to get. So if I moved the slider to the right, I didn't know if I was moving 1 second or 1 minute or one frame forward in time. There was just a random sort of preset, you know, amount of time, and I'm not sure. I don't remember what it is. I think it may be a second or something. But there was no way to control that. So that's one thing that I wanted to change, is being able to zoom in and out, because the sighted person can zoom in and zoom out and see the whole song in a glance, or see one measure take up the whole screen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I felt like we needed so we can make this thing more useful. The other thing that I don't know if they're going to do this or not, but a lot of modern music uses what we call pitch correction. I know. The generic term is sort of auto-tune. But it uses pitch correction. And in general terms, I'm opposed to it. Occasionally, there's a legitimate usage, I think. And for blind people, it's just not accessible because it's so graphic-oriented. It's just so sight-oriented. So what I recommended was that haptic wave on the right side, the axis that moves up and down, on the right side, it has a dB scale that you can just rest your hand against, and you can feel where the little fader comes to rest. And on the left side, it should have pitch references, so that we could actually go in and feel, okay, that note right there that I'm listening to, that's a B sharp. Well, there's no such thing as B sharp technically, but say it's a C, and it should be a C sharp. So I would be able to tell, oh, that's not what it should be, and then I should be able to click a button and move the fader where I want it and have that change take place. Now, that's a lot more ambitious, and I don't know if that's going to be incorporated, but I sure wanted to.
Does the fader move by clicks, so you have some audible measure?
Yeah, Jennifer, you surround yourself with smart people, let me tell you. That's a great question.
Thank you. I do think I like to think that I can surround myself with wonderful people and smart.
You
and
do.
As soon as when you said, I don't want to get too technical on you, I thought, baby, you're in the right place to be technical. Because even if I don't know what you're talking about, all my people do. I see Becky jump right on it. We were right in it.
You're the beauty and we're the brains, right? Is that what it is?
Oh,
God. My cousin said that to me years ago, and I was so crushed because I was the brains.
Which one did you want to be?
Well,
I mean,
hey, listen.
You'd be both,
dude, I'll be the brains anytime. I can take over the world, and she can be the pretty face. You know, I've got the face for radio. She's got the face for TV.
No. Well, wait a minute, because I'm going to have to give a few announcements for my very, very nice sponsors. And so, say anybody listening wants to call and ask Joey Stuckey or Becky Kyle a question, and call 646-716-9922. And I got to tell you, talking about that, Becky, and my brother David had dark hair, and he's so cute. My little brother Scott, oh, he was just a little cute blonde. And people would say, oh, David's so handsome. And then they would say, oh, Scott's so cute. And I swear to you, this is true. I heard it all my childhood. They'd go, and they'd look at me and they'd go, I bet you're good at your schoolwork, aren't you? So, it's like, you know, it's like I always knew that was coming. They'd always say me, I bet you're real good at schoolwork. Yeah.
Go ahead. I have two comments about that, but go ahead. You got to do your thing.
Okay, yes, I do. Okay, first of all, my little ad to cut short early. I got to get this in. This is, I wanted to say, can we really enjoy what we have when so many of us are going without? Or would our blessings be more enjoyable if everyone shared them? 17 years ago, Lisa Thomas McMillan was forced to consider these questions when she witnessed a woman struggling to pay for groceries, just a little small basket of groceries, and she made a vow that nobody should ever have to worry about having enough to eat. Lisa walked from her small town in Brewton, Alabama, to the state capital in Montgomery, and then to Washington, D.C., to raise awareness for hunger. Along the way, she met countless compassionate people who supported her cause, and her organization now feeds over 100 people a day. In her latest book, it's called Living Fulfilled, The Infectious Joy of Serving Others, she takes readers through her early life of working-class poverty to her nomadic lifestyle and back to her hometown, where she has dedicated her life to the poor and hungry. So please visit, this website is www.pleasebelievepeoplearehungry.com and order your copy to help with this worthy cause, help more hungry people. This book will help you become the best steward of the blessings you enjoy and realize how much we gain when we give. I love that part about the best steward of your blessings, too. And I've got a couple of more things for you to hear from people right now. Or maybe not. Let me try one more. I don't know what I did here. Oh, Joey, here you are talking about haptic waves, and I can't even work my own cue base.
Hello, Jennifer Perry here. You know, we all enjoy going out to nice restaurants for fabulous meals with family, friends, or a special someone. And we often wish we could do the same thing at home. It could save money, and sometimes it's a lot more convenient. And yet it always seems...
Okay, why don't I just tell you about it? And don't worry, to my nice sponsors are paid. I'll clean this up later. The idea is sometimes you like to go to a nice restaurant, but it's too expensive, or maybe it's too much of a hassle. You'd like to have friends over for dinner. Gosh knows, I would love to have Joey and Becky sitting around the table with me with a nice dinner, just so we could laugh and cut up as long as we wanted. This is a website called Think Yum. That's Think, T-H-I-N-K, Yum, Y-U-M, thinkyum.com. And what you can do, if you go onto that website, it tells you how it works. What they do is you sign up, and you can even get a 14-day free trial right now. But you can sign up, tell them what kind of food you like, and they send you recipes every day. Plus, they send you a whole list. You get the recipes. You get the shopping list, so you know exactly what to buy, and easy instructions from their chefs. And they even have a few recipes on there that they're giving away free, calling their Tasty Teasers. And I tried the chipotle. I think it was a maple chipotle chicken was the one I tried first. Delicious. Next, I'm going to try their veggie stir fry. But go to thinkyum.com. It's a great way to have all that kind of stuff taken care of for you, the shopping list, the recipes, how to do it, makes it easy so you can just have your friends over and be fabulous. And let's see, Joey, well, I guess you probably don't cook yet. I don't know. Some of your friends might come back from England, and who knows? What do you think, Becky? They'll have him cooking next.
Oh, no, I think he does cook.
I do toast.
Oh, he does.
I do toast. That's my contribution, toast.
Hey, I consider cooking a science experiment. It never comes out the same. I never follow a recipe, and it's generally good.
You know, my
but then again, complainers either don't survive or they don't come back.
Well, you know, but my wife's the same way. She's a fantastic cook, I guess by instinct. I mean, she cooks amazing food. Never quite the same way twice, but it's great.
Well, cooking's an experiment. If you're going to follow a recipe, you know, it's just like marching to the same tune all the time. Why would you want to? You know,
yeah.
Cooking should be like jazz. Wow. You know, if you're going to follow a, you know, there are some things that I will follow a recipe for, but very few of them. You know,
cookie,
okay,
like,
cookie.
Jeff, there is a catchphrase right there. That's just on T-shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great. You know, for someone like me, I mean, I would definitely want a recipe. I mean, I think I would do better. And the only problem is things like make sure the cat's not in the oven, that kind of stuff. So for blind people, that's trickier. You know, I mean, my cats are crazy. They hop if they see an open crawl space they haven't explored. I mean, they'll jump in. So, but
I've got a Tonkinese that warms his butt on the stovetop whenever we cook something in the oven. And I posted a picture of the Christmas, you know, us roasting prime rib in the oven, and Indy was lying lounged up on top of the stove, and there were people that were thinking he was being abused.
Oh yeah.
You know, it doesn't get that hot. He's just cold blooded.
That's amazing. That is, you know, did you say you had prime rib for Christmas?
Yes, we had prime rib for Christmas because I'm an iconoclast.
My dad wants to do that for New Year's Eve. That's what he wants to have for New Year's Day. I'm sorry, New Year's Day. So do you have a favorite prime rib recipe?
Well, we just tried one, I can't say I have a favorite. It was pretty good.
No one's in the hospital, nothing like that, so we're good.
Yeah, nobody's dead. Nobody's in the hospital. You know the scraps we threw out, the raccoons didn't die, so you know it's all right.
That's the trick. That's the real. If the raccoons are still good,
then again, they live in East Tennessee. You know, if somebody doesn't hit them with their car, they're going to live forever.
Little raccoons walk around with black armbands on in a circle. How could you tell? Cursing and spitting at your house. I don't know.
they're little black berets. You know?
It's all not a raspberry beret. That's right. Yeah.
Hey, listen. Okay, I've got one more ad to do, and you guys can feel free to chime in on this one, as you know, like we do sometimes with the old radio type thing. Sometimes I give you a script ahead of time. Be forewarned, folks, this wasn't scripted with my two co-hosts here, but these guys are pretty good at ad-libbing, trust me. Okay, are you ready, folks?
Ad-lying, in our case.
Ad-lying, that's all the same to me. Okay, I need some kind of a teletype, sort of a breaking news type sound effects.
Beep,
the got,
beep,
guys?
Beep, beep,
man.
Beep.
Okay, my Foley machine. Yes, that's right. She didn't. Thank God she didn't get that gig with Prairie Home Companion. We have.
Now we know what. Yeah. Garrett,
they'd have to beat me out all the time on
that
show.
Yeah, they would.
All right, folks. Okay, let's start again. Give me the teletype.
Beep, beep, beep,
okay.
Beep.
All right. Not the weather advisory. Okay, but never mind.
Oh, well, give me a break.
All right.
You know, I just came up with it on the spur of the moment.
Okay.
It's free. You can't really complain.
Got that right. We have breaking news from the vaping industry. For all you tobacco smokers and tobacco company stockholders, listen up, because this is very important. Now, I know we're all grown-ups here, and this isn't middle school health class. We all know smoking is bad. And I'm not here to preach. I just want to talk to you about the vape shop business. Vaping is a new hot niche that is taking entrepreneurs by storm. And you have to understand one thing. As consumers, vapers are unique. They are highly passionate about vaping. People love vaping. It's just flavored liquid nicotine. No tobacco, no smoke, just vapor. What are you guys laughing at? You know somebody's got to be dedicated.
I'm just thinking of a lot of people in dreadlocks with these right now. That's all, nothing.
Because you're thinking of people like people who will go out in the bitter cold outside the back of the office or whatever.
You should start sober. Come on, let me tell you about vaping.
Okay.
But that might be racist. Sorry.
Okay. All right, Joey, you go ahead and do the reggae thing behind me.
Oh, hell no, I'm not
going to pay for this. People love vaping.
They do.
It's just flavored
nicotine. And you
know
what?
Vape
me, mon. And the best thing is it won't make you go blind.
No tobacco.
I can promise.
Oh, how would you know? Oh, no tobacco, no smoke, just vapor. Even if you don't smoke. Joey, what do you know about dreadlocks? Even if you don't smoke or vape, at the very least, you should be aware of this new industry. Vape shop owners average about $300,000 in annual revenues, and that's not per owner, that's per store. I hope this guy doesn't ask for his money back, because he seems like a real nice guy, this advertiser. Anyway, and starting in February, a new company is about to take the vape shop owners, take their annual earnings through the roof. Here's how. Right now, you can't sell vape gear online anywhere. Okay, not on eBay. No, 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 no. Work with me. Not on Etsy. No,
no, no, no,
no,
no, no.
Not on Amazon. No,
no, no, no, no.
Not on Shopify.
No, no, no,
no, not anywhere. I'm trying to do the old Garrett Morris Ganja thing from Saturday Night Live. Okay, you can try, but that's just asking for trouble because they will come after you, ban you, and freeze your money. But there is hope. One company realized the vaping industry can't remain offline forever. So they have built an affiliate marketplace for vapor businesses, and it's called JV Tank. That's JVTANK, JV Tank. Suppose you own a vape shop. You're dealing with a customer who came in for a certain item that you don't have in stock. Understandably, they're upset. And that's it. Leave your store. They never come back. But now, you go, and now?
Oh, and now?
You can quickly check to see what other vape shop owners have in stock. And if it's available at a store in another area, you can accept that customer's credit card right there on the spot and earn an instant commission from that vape shop just for sending them the lead. It's just good old-fashioned affiliate marketing packaged inside a new hot niche.
Sneak it. Yeah, like they used to sneak out the back door. And
that's right.
Yeah.
Not many businesses out there can boast a 100% customer satisfaction rating. But if you run a vapor business, JV Tank can get you there. So this company is called JV Tank LLC. And it's the affiliate marketplace for vapor businessmen and women. And they're going to put the entire vaping community on digital steroids. That's what they say, and I believe them. That's JV Tank, spelled JVTANK. Check them out now at JVTank.com.
I feel tanked
yes,
already.
Yes, yes, yes,
yes. I'm coughing.
Yeah,
I'm
on.
Yeah, I'm on.
So now we're going to go have a horrible addiction to vapor. That's going to be what you've accomplished tonight.
No SB problema. You know, they're big. Can you get addicted to it? I didn't know. I thought people used it to try to get off smoking.
I don't know. It sounds pretty healthy. I mean, you know, comparatively speaking.
It's flavored nicotine.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want that?
Yeah, like Goofy Grape, you know, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Let's get back to the haptic waves.
I'm just waiting to hear the sound of the FBI knocking your door down. Because
if they could find the place that I'm at up here in the mountains right now, if they could make it in without falling off down a cliff or getting grabbed by a bear, it's like you don't just get out of your car and walk in the door. You have to get a look all around and see what's out there.
Do you live in like a special tree? Oh, okay. Do you have like a tree house? Is that what you live in? I'm just wondering.
No, it's just up in Mars Hill. But I didn't tell you about the – I thought you were asking
Mars
about the banana
Hill.
Tree. Yes,
no,
you,
but, I mean,
Jupiter.
I think we should do like a scavenger hunt. It should end at Jennifer's house, like up on the mountain.
Yeah,
I will drive the bus that takes all the new vape junkies on this scavenger hunt, and it'll be amazing. And we'll all wear cooking should be like jazz T-shirts. There you go. There's your 2016 holiday event right there.
Yep.
You have no idea. You just have no idea. I can't describe it to you. But it's like, it's not even base. Oh, never mind. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings that's here that I like. But this is, yeah, it's different.
Well, now let me ask you something, Jennifer. This has been a good year. And I know, I guess you guys are kind of talking about a year in review a little bit, right? So what are your big hopes for the next year? What are you up to? I know you don't do the Marilyn Monroe impersonations anymore.
No, I don't. I'm a little. No, I don't.
But that's because you're good at your schoolwork.
Yeah, I'm good at my schoolwork. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good callback. You know, that's very kind of you to ask me, because Becky Kyle knows that I plan to publish three books in the beginning of the year. They're almost finished. One is only needs two more stories. One is a self-promotion for a DIY promotion for writers. One is for musicians. But the other one that I think that will come out first that I'm especially fond of is called Memoirs of a Misanthrope.
Oh, I love it. What a title.
Thank you. And it is
that sucks you right in.
It's a collection of essays from my blog, Memoirs of a Misanthrope, true stories, things that really have happened to me. Some of the stories we've kind of held back because they involve family members. And if you've ever seen that blog, Memoirs of a Misanthrope, that's most of this. But I've got some new stories I'm about to put in. And it's about my life as a freak magnet.
That is so cool. Is that the subtitle?
Yes.
My life as a freak magnet, because that is awesome. I mean, the only problem is you might get the wrong audience for that subtitle.
Oh, yes, they call her the freak.
Yeah, they might get the 50 Shades of Grey audience right there. You might get that kind of.
But yes, yeah, so
and there I was thinking Cheech and Chong.
Well, you know, if you
but
listen,
Ossifer, you do not understand.
Ossifer, that's right. My favorite thing of theirs is Blind Melon Chipmunk. That is the greatest sketch ever. I don't know if you ever heard that Blind Melon Chipmunk thing. That is awesome. If anyone, the only thing is, I just wish, as I said to Alan Parsons, I said, you know, every time you say the word blind, I should get a royalty. And you know, because he's got that song "Eye in the Sky," and he's got that line, "I can teach you blind," and I'm like, you know, I should really get paid for that. And you know, with every time Cheech and Chong does the Blind Melon Chipmunk, I think I should get a royalty. Which I will naturally divvy up with my fellow blind people after a healthy, percentage cut to me.
Sure.
We all, were the incentivist of that idea.
Yeah, I mean, and also, I mean, it's definitely as legal as a vape shop. So.
Well, and you're center of that haptic wave.
Exactly.
And let me see. And as long as we're name dropping, as I said to Alan Parsons, Becky.
You see how casually I did that? Yeah.
I saw it. It wasn't that casual, but this Becky.
I drilled on my keyboard when he said that.
Well, you should. That's what I was going for.
All right. Well, Becky's. We got somebody else joining us here in the room. Security forgot to buzz them in, but we've got one more person coming in. Hi. Welcome to Madame Perry Salon.
Hi. My name is Julie.
Hi, Julie.
How's it going? Hi.
Julie, it's going great. We're so glad you're here.
Yeah,
find a place to sit down.
Give a call. Got talked into it.
Well, that must be Julie Campbell then.
Uh-huh.
That is Julie Campbell.
Well, don't sound so excited, Julie. I'm
Hi, yeah, I'm excited.
And
I'm a little bit afraid, actually.
What?
Be very afraid. She knows me well.
Let's just be exhilarated. This is our friend Joyce Ducky, who's talking about haptic waves, and we've even got a video of him driving blind in Macon, Georgia.
Good stuff.
You can't tell him from the guys that are, but you really can't tell him from the guys that are driving with their head up their apps anyway.
Probably
oh,
not.
God.
That's
one of the things
outfit,
I do it. Is drive professionally, and I'm pretty convinced most of the people aren't paying, you know, any attention to the road whatsoever. So he probably did a better job than most of them.
My
inattention
wife
blindness
said that.
Is a real thing.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you know, the fact is, I mean, like I said, the main thing is just to have supreme confidence and no idea of what you're doing. That's the trick.
Gotcha.
Jennifer
well,
should know. On that note, she's hanging up on me.
Just keep working it, honey. So, Julie, introduce yourself to the audience. Tell the people who you are, because I don't have your resume in front of me. I didn't know I would get lucky enough to get the call, but I'm glad you did.
Well, I'm Julie, and I write young adult fantasy and urban fantasy and lots of other types of fantasy and sci-fi. And I also write with Becky a little bit, which is why I called. I was going to get her to make fun of me a little bit.
Oh, I thought you were going to make fun of me. I'm so unprepared.
Yeah,
that is
you
got to cool.
make fun of me. What's it like to write with someone like me?
Oh, well, she's organized, and she's keeps
refusing. Oh, you're nice to me.
Such a weirdo.
My God. I mean, how can you be creative and organized at the same time? That doesn't work.
No, actually, I think we play on each other's insanity.
Mm.
You know, one of us says one thing and the other one just has to ramp it up a bit, you know, kind of like being in here.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Oh, God, we're all joined at the hip. That's kind of frightening.
You know, I've never written fiction before. I think I'm a huge fantasy fan and science fiction fan, because most of the really intelligent commentary on the world as we know it comes from that genre. I think specifically some of the great science fiction writers in the 40s and 50s, like Heinlein and Asimov, and those guys were just geniuses. But I know finding someone that you can write with as a musician is really tricky, and I don't do it that often. I mean, it takes a very special person for me to write with them, because it's such a personal process. So you guys must be really very compatible to make it work.
We've sold what, half a dozen stories so far?
Yeah.
And we've got a novel in submission.
Where are you
shipping
these? Where are these stories found? Where can you find these stories that you've sold?
Lorelei Signals, for one, off of Wolfsinger Press.
Uh-huh.
Just Another Day in Neutral and Boring is the first story in the series. I told you it was unscripted. I need you to come in and edit, probably.
This is the other Lorelei Signal story. We've got a story in an anthology called Misunderstood, in which rather well-known author Jody Lynn Nye also has a story. Just tickles me to death.
Awesome.
We've got a story in Under a Dark Sign, I think there's another one out there. I can't remember right now.
Alternatives, but it hasn't been published yet.
Oh, that's right.
Epona's Children.
Yes.
Mm. Do you guys have common influences? I mean, do you have some of your who's your writing heroes in the genre?
Jody Lynn Nye.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Ann Scarborough.
Yes.
From Britain.
Let's see, Anne McCaffrey.
I got to meet her once, and she's fantastic. She is really, really cool. Is she still alive?
No, she is not.
No.
I didn't think she was. Okay.
To my great sorrow.
We saw her at Dragon Con one year, and I think I was probably the only guy in there, but I really enjoyed her storytelling, and I thought it was fantastic. And I mean, everything from the Pern stuff that I guess my favorite stuff was the Crystal Singer series, because I thought some of her sort of nods to the music was pretty interesting. But that's fantastic.
Wrap it up, guys. We got about 70 seconds left, so I hate to cut you off. This has been great. Thank you all so much. Becky Kyle, also Rebecca McFarland Kyle, Julie Campbell, Joey Stuckey. Thank you all so much for being here to talk about haptic waves and Fanny and Dice and all the cool stuff you guys are into. I'm going to take us out with Joey Stuckey, Loving a Turnstile.
All right.
Joey, good to see you again. Thanks, Julie. And I'm looking fit and trim. She's dancing with me, yeah. Now she's walking out with him. It's not a classic love story. We're finding ourselves in. There'd be a lot less drama if I could write him out of the script.